Leadership, sure. Charlie.
Oh. I don't know if they were supposed to give it to Kim.
Thank you.
All right, we'll get started with the February 3rd, 2015 regular board meeting and our agenda. We need to take some action on closed session. So let me get myself organized. If we could take I would like a motion, please, with regard to the stipulated expulsion.
I'll move approval of the recommendation.
And I'll second.
Right. We have a motion by Marilyn Roger and a second by Jim Quisenberry. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, opposed? And Mr. Unger is absent, so we have 6 in favor. Then, with regard to the discussion on Cassie waiver requests.
That's an
error. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm getting ahead of myself. Okay, so that's it. Okay, so we further discussed student personnel and conference with labor negotiators. Is there a consensus on the order of business? Everyone okay?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Approval of the minutes from January 13. Any discussion, changes?
I'll move approval of the minutes of January 13th.
I'd like to... There was a suggestion I made for correction. Is that before us now? Okay, thank you. Then I'll second that, please.
All right. Any further discussion? So we have a motion by Walter Millar, a second by Mark Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? No. And Mr. Unger is absent. So moving on to the item 4.04, approval of the minutes from January 16th, our study session. Any corrections, comments? Okay. Then someone would make a motion, please.
I'll move approval of the minutes of January 16th.
I'll second that.
All right. Any further discussion? We have... a motion by Catherine Eisendrath Rogers, a second by Jim Quisenberry. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Mr. Unger is absent. All right. Great. One of our favorite parts of the evening, student representatives to the board. I see John O. Roberts here with Shelby. And John O., you're giving the report, it's my understanding.
Yeah. In my defense of bringing my whole posse along with me, there was a lot of hype that there was going to be all these people here, and we seem to have just missed them. So, sorry, guys.
Thank
Maybe
you
next
for
year.
Coming, though. Thanks for coming.
We'll clap loud.
So all I have to talk about this time is that we, this last weekend, just had our winter formal. The theme was Night on the Nile. It was super cool. We had this huge pharaoh's head right over the DJ. We had all these different hieroglyphs everywhere, and we had a lot of people come, and it was a really good time. Everyone had a blast. And on February 14th, we have a daddy-daughter dance coming up, and it's not just for fathers and daughters, but father figures, and so they will come to our dance hosted, and it's on Valentine's Day, so, you know, just a real cutesy thing going along. It's for the elementary schools, that's right, yeah. So thought I'd throw that one out, and that's all I have to talk about today. I'm willing to open up to any Q&A, seeing as how short this was, but
You're not accustomed to taking so little time here.
I know. It's weird for me. It's just as weird for me as it is for you.
It looks as though we have someone who will give you a little more time here. Mr. Quesenberry.
Yes. Now, is this you're hosting this for the elementary schools at San Luis High?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Yeah, that sounds great. All right, anyone else? All right, well, for you and your posse, thank you very much for coming. We understand how schoolwork takes precedence. However, if you'd like to stay and enjoy the rest of the proceedings, please feel free.
Well, it's National Carrot Cake Day, and at Black Horse Coffee, it's only $3 a slice. So we've made some plans. And,
you've got your work cut out for
as
you.
As much as we'd love to stay, it's
little
a price
sugar
you can't
before
beat.
Studying.
Understand? Exactly.
All right.
So I'll tell my parents.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. All right. Item 6.01 is correspondence, and I don't have any to report. Do you have any correspondence to report? No. All right. So at this time, this is the time for public comment. If anyone has anything they wish to address the board on that is not on the regular agenda, or if it is, if you'd like to wait until then. Otherwise, we have one speaker now. I see someone else coming forward. Mrs. Roger will take your sheet. We have someone before you. And you'll have 3 minutes in which to address the board. Mrs. Roger.
Okay, Mr. Perry, yes.
Hello, I'm Charlie Perry, yes. Retired teacher from Monarch Grove, Los Osos Middle School in Bishop's Peak. And like Jono, I thought there would be a bunch of people here, but you know, you retire and they leave you out of the loop. So such is life. When I first felt compelled to speak at tonight's meeting, I spent some time on stopbullying.gov. Collecting definitions of bullying behavior and suggesting how to end bullying on school campuses. But after reading my notes aloud, I got really uncomfortable. The talk I'd prepared was incriminating. Given recent events, there was no question. The finger pointing was ugly, and I wasn't going to do that. I decided against it. So I'm going to say, in my 28 years with San Luis Coastal, whenever I made a comment about the district, as though the district was some foreign entity, I was reminded by a friendly administrator that the district was not a separate entity from its teachers, that we're all one, that we're a team. A team with the same goals, and a team with a shared culture and shared ethics. And even though sometimes during negotiating, that particular understanding of things creates a little cognitive dissonance, when we do understand ourselves as unified, as a team, as one organism, it's kind of a corrective strategy. And so to bring that corrective understanding of things to reality, decision-making has to be sort of equitably shared. Team members have to communicate honestly. They have to celebrate one another's strengths. They have to behave respectfully. They probably shouldn't sue one another. I've taught since 1980. Back then, I drove a 1964 Beetle. Teaching that many years, I have a bias, no doubt about it. I have my opinions on who's the engine of a school district. But after driving that 64 Beetle all those years, I've learned not to ask my engine to do too much. I'm sure many of you drove a 65 Beetle, and you know that. I learned to give it good gas and give it oil. And unless the starter wasn't working, not to hit it with a hammer. And it really feels like lately there's been a lot of that. So I'm hoping that we can work towards some unity and kind of see that it is a team. And thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, now,
did you fill out a form, a sheet?
I did not. I had asked Kim Holmes where I should speak to the National School Counselors part. She said open comment, so she said I didn't need to fill it out. So I'm hoping this is okay to speak now, or I could speak later. I'm okay? Okay. I'm Rose Fowler, the school counselor at Del Mar and Monarch Grove, and I'm here to speak about the National School Counselors Week. As a part of the First Lady Michelle Obama's Reach Higher initiative, for the first time, there is a National School Counselor of the Year. Tanya Pringle, a California CTA member from Hoover High School in San Diego, was named one of the top five finalists, so I'm very proud of that. We should be here in California. She was invited to the White House for a ceremony similar to the Teacher of the Year reception. The ceremony was the kickoff for the National School Counselors Week, which is actually this week. We're in it currently. I had put forth a proclamation to be read tonight, and I'm not sure if that made it to the agenda or not. I'm going to save that because I can give you a copy of that, but I just want to tell you a little bit about myself. You don't know my story, and I know Eric is always talking about our own personal story. So I am one of 13 children. I grew up, my dad did not graduate from high school. I think he had an undiagnosed learning disability, but he always told us that we could do whatever we set our minds to do, and he always encouraged us to get an education. So I was next to the oldest. I have 8 sisters and 4 brothers. We all ended up being professionals as a result of, I believe, the influence of our school counselors in the public school system. I have there is a teacher, a physicist, a nurse, a physician's assistant, 2 engineers, ITs in school, a banker, and a CPA, just to name a few of us. And my older sister, she and her husband are both teachers in high school. Her 2 children are teachers at the junior high level, and their 2 wives are also teachers. So education goes deep in my family, and I respect it a lot. My original goal, well, actually my career inventory had said I should be a florist. And had I listened to that, I'm not sure if it was because my name was Rose or not. I've always kind of wondered. But if it was a career tech that had tried to steer me in the right way, I think I might have gotten lost along the way. My parents didn't have the ability to show me the way, so my school counselor was pivotal in my success. They got me to the right classes. They saw that I had ability in math and science. They reminded me to sign up for California State Scholarship Federation. They gave me the forms to fill out for scholarships, so I was able to earn, with my grades, scholarships to cover my bachelor's degree because my parents had no means of supporting me through college. I worked and went to school. My original goal was to just be a mother, a stay-at-home nurturing mother like my own mother, but to only have 6 children instead of 13. I thought that was a good compromise. I'm hoping it'll be okay if I continue on.
If it's brief.
It's very brief. You've gotten to my adulthood already. I learned to teach. My bachelor's is in psychology, but I was able in my first job to learn how to do assembly language programming and COBOL programming and basic programming. And I eventually got a job at Cal State Bakersfield in their programming department and was able to co-author their online registration system and implement it live, which was amazing. It's one of my greater accomplishments in life, in the early 1980s. Now, that's when computers were nearly as big as this room, so that was a long time ago. 25 years after I got my bachelor's, I was able to go back to school and get my pupil personnel credential, which is what my original goal was, but I had to work in order to support myself. So I just want to say how important school counseling was in my personal life and how important it is to some of those students that I work with at Del Mar that don't have parents that went to college, and they need that guidance from their high school counselors as well. So happy National School Counselors Week, and I hope you can support our children in that way.
Thank you. Anyone else from wishing to make public comment at this time? Okay. Now we're ready for superintendent's updates, beginning with business and budget.
Yeah, so a couple of things for the business budget update tonight. The legislative session is kicking off, and so now all the new laws, ideas start being formed and coming out. So a couple for us in terms of district that have been highlighted recently with SF Square and school services. One is we have this huge ongoing debt that has been placed upon districts for STRS and PERS, retirement benefits, that's going to increase dramatically over the next 6 years. And so there is some language that's being developed to try to work with the governor in having those liabilities come off of the Prop 98 funds first and not as part of LCFF, the local control funding formula target. So that it's a conversation that they're having that's a push. And the reason why that would help is because that would then, right now, the districts have that liability anyways within that LCFF amount. So this would then keep that target growing, I guess, you know, pay off those liability debts and then, you know, continue to work towards that the LCFF target as well. So that's one, you know, kind of idea that's been placed out there. We'll see if it gains traction or not, or how it goes, but definitely a big liability for us in that way. The other is minimum state aid. So as I've talked about with the 7-year budget projection, there is currently right now kind of a conflict of whether or not we will lose our minimum state aid, which is about $3.4 million to the district, if LCFF is fully funded. So SF Squared is kind of lobbying our behalf to put some legislation in to hopefully ensure that that doesn't go away. Because at no point in that projection have I taken those dollars out of the budget. So that would be a huge extra liability placed on the budget, the district's budget, should that happen. So we'll follow that. We'll see what we need to do to support it. But those are two kind of key areas that are coming up that have been discussed in terms of state budget-wise, and we'll see what else comes out of the legislature. I also wanted to we kicked off our LCAP meetings. So today I was at PB to start the meetings and go through. And so I wanted to quickly have Kim kind of show up on the board right now. But for anybody who wants to at home, if they want to see what we're doing with LCAP, which is our local control accountability plan, which came into effect when LCFF, the new local control funding formula model for districts, came up, you know, we had to develop a plan for that. And so last year, if you go to the community section on our webpage, and you go down to community page, and then if you go scroll down a little bit, you'll see the word LCAP right there, and you can just click on it. And so again, what we have is basically all of the information that we gathered from last year's meetings. So we went out and we talked to everybody in the community from all the different groups, and we surveyed employees, and we wrote down everything everybody said at each site. And so, you know, trying to just be as transparent as possible about all those things. And so we have now, we're going to basically kick off this next round for 15-16, basically, for that LCAP. And so what I have done, and I'm going to hand this off to Rick in a minute to further explain the rest of the process, but what I did and what I blogged out today to all of our employees is a history of our budget in San Luis Coastal Unified from 0203 until last year to go along with our 7-year projection. Because even for myself, I wanted to get a better picture of where the district was then, where it is now, and why. And then, you know, that helps. You know, the history helps us in terms of looking at the future, I think. And so, you know, the district had some great years. Great years in the 2000s in terms of property tax increases, and everybody who owns a home knows what I'm talking about. Values increased dramatically, right, during those years. And so at the same time, we had declining enrollment as well in the district. So it provided a nice, stable base in terms of, I think, with the district. So a lot of pay increases, if you look at our history. A lot of reserve levels rose. The district started funding Fund 20, our post-retirement benefits at the time, to get to that point. Then comes the downturn. And it's interesting because I think we were fortunate in that our economy is a bit of a bubble for California and that our property values didn't drop like a lot of places in the state. And so we kind of maintained from that property tax base as a basic aid school district. However, because of the fair share reductions that happened, to kind of make it equivalent for what other districts were facing, we lost those categorical funds, over $8 million. And so if you look at that trajectory, you'll see where man, in 11, 12, 12, 13, we, as a district, you know, our expenditures are $5 million over our revenues for those 2 years. Tough times. So happily, we well, maybe unhappily, because we had to make some reductions. So we have pulled out of those reductions, I would say. We've reinstated a lot of positions, not all, but a lot. And we have a balanced budget last year. And so that is something that, you know, it was just interesting to really look at that and to think of now we have our enrollment increasing at the same time that all of this is happening. And so it was just a great look. It showed a lot of prudence, I think, on the board's part in terms of during those times to have reserves, to put money into Fund 20, which is still under, you know, underfunded even today. But that Fund 20 really helped us during those 2 years where we took money out and didn't put money back in. So those types of things, I think, are important for us to kind of remember as we plan and look forward and project into the future. So, but all of that went out to staff today, and we, as we go around to talk to LCAP, we review those with the staff and all funds and all money that we have. And so then I'm going to have Rick kind of talk about the rest of the process that happens when we're in those LCAP meetings.
Questions for Ryan first? Or you want me
I was just going to make a couple of comments. One is the one piece that got left out of your very concise history was that the property tax bubble saved us from the PG&E bankruptcy. So that was we were staring at losing basic aid, and mm-hmm. basically the escalation in home prices and property values saved us from that. Another piece that I think needs to be mentioned is that we bridged financed for some of those years in anticipation of the deferrals being paid back to us. Not the deferral, is that the right term? Being paid back to us. And then, of course, most of the paybacks, to the extent there have been any, are in revenue limit amounts, which do not include us. So the other question I wanted to ask goes back to your first thing you were talking about paying the STRS and PERS out of Prop 98 funds. How does that help us?
Well, if it includes basic aid school districts.
Yes, that's always the if.
That would be the if.
Yeah.
Right? So if that was a funded liability out of Prop 98 first for all districts.
Okay.
Then that would be a benefit for us.
Hope springs eternal.
But. Okay. Again, there's a lot of things being talked about in California right now in the legislature, I'm sure, so we'll see how it goes. But, you know, that in terms of the reserve part, too, I mean, our reserve was $25 million. A couple of years ago, it's $19 million. So, I mean, you can see a dramatic there's a reason to have a savings account, have those one-time dollars available just in case. So those are things for us to continue to look at, again, as we project and as we look forward.
So just to continue a little bit, as you know, the Local Control Accountability Plan, I've said it over and over again, is a 3-year plan that we update annually. So we're not looking at major overhauls. However, we want to be responsive to all of our stakeholders every year and kind of looking at our direction. Where are we going? Is there anything we should tweak and change? What Mrs. Holmes is putting up there right now is our meeting calendar. We just solidified this last Friday, and the meetings all started today, so we will be hitting every school, various community groups, employee groups, giving you updates at the board meeting. Obviously, as board members, you're welcome to attend any of those sessions at the schools or, you know, whatever your calendar would fit in. The idea of those meetings, as Mr. Pinkerton has said, is for Mr. Pinkerton, Kristen Newland, and I will be attending all of those. We will be discussing the kind of that whole fiscal scenario, which is a big part of funding, the funding formula, and but then really talking about some of our accomplishments that we did, what we did in this last year with our plan, what we've accomplished, and then to kind of foresee where we're going. But there's three questions that we're asking people to weigh in on, asking teachers, secretaries, parents that might be coming, depending on the group who's there, which is, you know, what are we doing well? What in this plan seems to be working right that we're getting some agreement and feedback from? What should we be doing differently or more of? What is there a direction that we should be taking that we're not within this plan? And then very importantly, well, what should we stop doing? Because as I've heard many times, there's never a shortage of good ideas. There's often a shortage of resources. So what if we're going to do this, if A, then what B needs to go away? And so last year we had some fantastic discussions. I mean, out of those discussions, we came up with six focus areas, put a lot of attention into those focus areas, but also did things like lower class size at the elementary. We heard that from elementary teachers. We did work on increasing prep time with elementary PE. We Wi-Fi'd up our elementary schools entirely. So there's certain things that we can look back on, and we want to share those things, say, this is what we did. Here's what the data shows. This is what we accomplished over this 6 months of the first half of the year. So we're looking forward to that. I also wanted to mention, and I really appreciate Mrs. Fowler coming up here, because I have the proclamation for the National School Counseling Week. We sometimes miss these things. There's so many of these things happening, and I'm not trying to belittle it. It's an important thing, but we got from the California Association of School Counselors that it is National School Counselor Week, as well as Carrot Cake Day, I guess. I do also want to introduce, and unless there's questions specifically for me, a little mini presentation from two people in the audience, because one of our LCAP ideas was to really investigate personalized learning, personalized computerized learning. We know that one of the tricks of differentiation, of truly differentiating the learning experiences for 24, 28, 32 students in a class is a daunting challenge for teachers. And we know that one of the secrets is using technology effectively. We don't know what the best thing is out there, which is why we're piloting stuff and trying different things and seeing if there is some magic bullet where personalized learning, computer-based personalized learning might help with that differentiation. One of those things we've investigated is a program called MION, and we've asked Sharon Haupt and Jennifer Dinelli to explain a little bit about that and how it has been working. So come on up and share that, if you would. And it looks like Mrs. Shields also.
So good evening. I'm sorry. Good evening, and thanks for having us here tonight. So we want to share with you some information about this MION pilot that we've been doing at Baywood and other sites. So MION is basically a personalized library of ebooks for our students. So if you go to the next slide, we have access currently to over 4,100 ebooks, and those are unlimited access. The word MION actually stands for My Books, My Choice, My Growth, and My Access, meaning it's on all the time for kids. Their reading choices are based on an assessment that they take when they log in for the first time. And then they also have an interest survey. So when they go back to the program, the dashboard that comes up for them are all books based on their Lexile reading level and their interests that they filled out in the survey. These include fiction, nonfiction, graphic novels, poetry, all types of text types, and it's also available in English and Spanish. So then there are short comprehension quizzes at the end, and the program has the ability to track the time that students spend reading, the number of books that they browse through, and then the number of books that they finish. They also have projected reading growth for each student, and I have the ability to create book sets for teachers at all different grade levels where that match what's happening in their classroom. And I can create them district-wide, and I can create them specifically for a classroom or a site. Next slide. These are where we are currently piloting the program. We have Baywood, which started last summer, and Hawthorne started last summer during summer school. And then C.L. Smith started in August, and Del Mar is going to be starting this month. I just got the data back yesterday from Mion where all the student information had been entered, so I need to set up professional development for those teachers and go to the site and do that for them. So once Del Mar is online, this program will be available to this many students. This is what's happening in all of our third grades in those three sites that we have right now. And this is starting from September and then going just to the 25th of January. And as you can see, it's been a progressive growth with a little blip here and there simply because of holidays and things like that. But so far, from September to January, our students have read 754, third graders. You can see the total amount that I put up there with the number of books read by everybody at those three sites and the number of time they spent reading. And specifically for our third graders, they've read 754 books and 716 hours. Okay?
So I think that those numbers are pretty impressive, over 16,000 books read by our kids in this amount of time. I just wanted to share a little bit of our experience at Baywood as one of the sites that has been piloting Mion. We started at the end of last school year. We introduced the program to all of our students, kindergarten through fifth grade, and they all took an interest survey as well as an assessment. And then we were able to send login information home to students so that they could have access over the summertime to books if they chose to. And then in summer school, we continued our pilot with our kindergarten through fifth graders. And one of the things we saw right away was that our kids just loved the books. Kids were excited about reading. These were kids we invited to summer school who a lot of them were concerned about their reading performance. So that was very exciting to see. We continued our pilot this school year in kindergarten through fifth grade, and we're also using Mion in our extended day intervention program. We have 40 students 5 days a week who are coming for a reading intervention, and independent reading on Mion is a component of that. So we have a couple of students up here saying a few brief words about Mion.
Mion.
Oh, that was very brief.
I really like the book Mion. I like Mion because the books have more information.
We've received positive feedback from our students, our parents, and our teachers. I'll tell you, thank you, Kim, sorry. The number one comment I hear from our kids is, I love the books. Our kids are able to find books that are in an area of their interest and that are at their reading level. So kids are saying they make reading fun. Our parents have told me they really appreciate that Mion brings an entire library into their home. So rather than just having the one book that kids bring home in their book bag, they have access to thousands of books at their fingertips. Our teachers have given a lot of positive feedback. One powerful comment that I hear over and over that really strikes me is that our most reluctant readers are loving the books and loving reading. Our kids who are the hardest to engage are engaged. And so this is one of our teachers. She's going to share a few thoughts. Cindy Dixon, she's been using Mion in our after-school program. Again, that's where we're serving about 40 students after school, Monday through Friday, a lot of our English learners and students who have needs in reading. So here are her thoughts on her experience.
The top two reasons why I believe we should have Mion as part of our literacy program at Baywood is that, number one, it's student-driven and teacher-guided. And the second reason why is I especially love the fact that students are able to access books and read books, especially our English language learners. They are able to do this at home, at school, on their own, and be successful.
I cut her a little bit short. But I think the points she makes are the things we're hearing over and over again, that this is student-driven, that all of our kids have access to books of their interest, at their level, at their fingertips. And that's been a huge game changer and shift for us from our regular standard where kids have a ton of access to books in their classroom and at our school site, but this has just opened up a much wider range. So looking forward for us, we're excited at Baywood to continue this pilot this school year and moving into next school year. A couple things we're looking at is we know as we get more devices on our campus that we'll be able to increase our campus on the school site. And also that we'd like to look at how we can use these texts to support our cross-curricular learning goals with Common Core in instruction as well as just our independent reading. So for us, it's been a really positive experience, and it's been a great addition to our comprehensive literacy program.
Okay.
I'd like to add just one more thing, that I really find that our kids are so lucky because this is one more piece of their tool belt where they can access resources. So they have their classroom library, they have their school library, they have this, they have the public library, and they might have a library in their home. And it's just one more tool that they have in their tool belt in helping develop their reading and their love of reading.
All right. So thanks for allowing us to share and hearing from us tonight.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. Is there anyone from the public who would like to address this item? Okay. Seeing none, Mr. Buckman and Mrs. Roger.
Thank you.
Oh,
please.
Yes.
Resource specialist at Baywood, and I want you to picture a little EL learner. She's in fourth grade. When I started working with her in kindergarten, I thought she was not going to do well at all. Well, this little girl over Christmas won the contest for the most, I think it was pages read, of anybody in fourth grade. So she's in my room. Mrs. Dinelli comes over the loudspeaker and says who won. And this little girl was hoping, you know, she knew she had read a lot. You should have seen her face. Now, this is a girl that if she went to the library, she wouldn't be able to find something to read. You should have seen her face. It was like she had won $1 million. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm talking to these guys. It was like she had won $1 million. Everybody in the room started screaming and shouting and clapping, and it was so reinforcing for her. But that was really exciting. But what's really exciting to me as her teacher is her reading is really taking off. Now, she's still having trouble with comprehension. She's still Spanish dominant. She still has a learning disability, but she's turning into a reader. And I think Mayan had a big part to play in it. Right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. Marilyn?
Mark?
Is that okay?
Sorry, I need to write these down.
Okay, thanks. I appreciate it. Hi, I have just a couple of questions, and
sure.
I think Marilyn does too. This is like a real wow, and personal stories just make it that much more dramatic, and it's wonderful. In reading the little bit that we had, I noticed that the words is they could either read the books or listen to the books, and I know when I listen to books on tape, I kind of fade in and out, and sometimes forget what this. So, is there some way that you control that for by grade level or by skill?
I have the ability to turn those type of things on or off for a whole site, and a teacher can also turn them off for her whole classroom or turned on. You can't really do individualized yet because some students might be in a classroom and then in a resource class, and so there are conflicts, and we're learning to work that out. I think the important thing is that we need to really model and teach our students that you can take your headphones off, or you can click the icon to mute the book. And so, and when they are listening, they are in front of the book. Mm-hmm. We, you know, in summer school, we learned that kids are pretty resourceful and smart. They were, listening to a book, opening a tab, and playing solitaire or something, you know. But we've learned it's a teachable moment, and they realize they need to be watching the text as they're hearing it. So it's really a great piece for that fluency.
And I would imagine some of the students with some disabilities, it's like, oh my God, I can listen to a whole book.
Yeah.
I do have a second question, and it only came up this evening. When we're talking about sending it home for the summer, sending the password home for the summer, mm-hmm. and all this excitement, there's a lot of overlap in our ELD and our SED students, and I like to refer to it as the technology gap, which is a mm-hmm. subset of the achievement gap. And so I just need to know how we're coping with that. And I doubt that you have the answer, and I doubt Kim McGrath has the answer yet.
Yeah.
But it just, that scares me just a little bit, because if there's not, here comes the end.
Yeah.
Is there access for those children that don't have internet?
What I can tell you is that, and I think this is not new in San Luis Coastal, is there's access to older computers that we no longer need that are being sent home, which is not the internet access.
Right.
So we still have families that don't have internet access. It's absolutely true, which is why I think at the pilot schools, what we're starting to see, and Jennifer spoke of that as well, after-school programs as well. For kids that are not going to get it at home, they can still get that power of it after school. And then, do you have the info on the building a library set? And is that even appropriate now? Never mind. That's
okay,
not appropriate
that's okay.
Now.
And
I do know that these books are accessible anywhere, so if family doesn't have internet at home, if they went to the public library, they could log in and get it there. If they have a smartphone, which I don't know if they would have that if they don't have internet, but it can be read on your phone also. So there are ways and places that those kind of kids can go to, and it might be something to think about, you know, as we look at our summer school program and think, well, what can we do in the evenings or something for families to come in and use a space that normally is closed and can be accessible for everybody. Okay. Thank you.
Marilyn?
Thank you. Mr. Buckman's question really was my question. So I have that same interest in how are we serving students who may not have access to the internet at home. And
the other thing that's a possibility with this program, I don't mean to interrupt.
No, go.
But I know, and I don't know where we're at yet with checking out devices from school to take home, but you can download at school 20 to 30 books onto a device, and then as you take them home, they can be read offline. So as we look towards, well, are we going to check these devices out or not to give those students access, there is that possibility to download at school and then take home and read.
So if a student's family was given or somehow obtained a surplus computer such as Mrs. Shields was referring to, that computer could be brought to school and...
No, that would only be on a tablet or a device like a... phone or a tablet. I don't think it'll download onto the actual computers themselves.
Okay.
If they checked out a device?
Okay.
Yeah.
It's. I think what we're learning is the cost of these tablets is going down. You start comparing them with the cost of what we remember textbooks being, and there's going to come a place where they get pretty close. And at that point, or sooner than then, when we can start loaning our new textbooks, the tablets out, this would be the type of program that would be really accessible for kids.
Okay. It sounds like a great program, and I just would love to believe that all kids could get it all the time. Thanks.
Thank you.
Well,
I don't really have this thought very well formulated, but I used to work with Jill Sable in the Smith Library in like second, third grade range, and it was a thrill to watch these kids come into the library and just go right to the sections of books and things that they knew, because it was like a trend. All the boys would be going to one area and all the girls the other, and this is just an unbelievable leveraging of that student-driven initiative, and I'm thrilled, and I bet Jill Sable would be thrilled too. So.
Okay, anyone else? All right. So, Rick, was that your report as
that
well?
That concludes it. Okay. I had very little to do with it.
Thank you. All right, back to Ryan for Measure D update, I believe.
And so Mayan is a product of our LCAP.
Hooray.
You know. It's all part of it, right?
Good.
It's great. So Measure D, we had our study session. The minutes were approved tonight, which really went over John Isom talking about bond sales and how they work and the impact and how to lay those out. We compared that with Julie Avnet from Spectrum Solutions in terms of cash flow models, right? And hopefully the board got to see the marriage of those two things and how we have to use both in terms of our planning for projects and how this entire program and construction will be laid out over the next 7 years, 5 to 7 years. The board will have a resolution to begin those bond sales at our next board meeting. So you'll be getting some information. So Bill Cady from Jones Hall is putting together that information. Just so that you know, when they put all of that together and now the timelines and how this all works, they send all of this information, goes to our county superintendent of schools, it goes to our tax collector, it goes to the treasurer's office. So we've now kind of drawn in all of those county officials that, you know, have to put this in terms of the payments and the taxes and those types of things that tie into it. So they're all part of this process. They're actually looking at the resolution now and the information that Mr. Cady's put forward. And so we'll refine that. We will most likely bring that to the board at our next session. Okay? The other thing that has kicked off, and you'll see the architect contracts later on in the on the agenda, but we have kicked off our site committees at both schools, at Morro Bay High and San Luis Obispo High School, in terms of the two comprehensive high schools at this time. So these contracts will kind of tie into those two things. And I think there was really good kind of vibe. We kind of, Anthony and I met with the group, set the stage for kind of the goals and where we're headed and what we need to do and what the two groups need to accomplish. And so those were good meetings, and then they broke off. And then we got out of their way. And so the architects and the site committees from each school site began to talk and develop. And so those site committees at each site are a broad range of individuals from the schools in working with the principals, as well as some of their students' representatives on there, as well as community representatives and parents. So they're pretty broad-based and exciting. Our next board study session, the focus of that study session will be for us to look at a little bit closer look at construction delivery models, as well as the management of construction, and what are the good and bads of doing this in-house, and what are our capabilities in that realm, as well as hiring a firm that would do the entire project, construction management firm, and everything in between. So kind of looking at that long range and how this kind of lays out. And so Mr. Palazzo will be there to kind of lead the board through that discussion, as well as myself, and to look at all the options. We've been doing a lot of research and collecting a lot of data to share with the board on those at that session.
Okay. Thank you very much. Anyone from the public here to talk about this? Anyone from the board have any questions for Mr. Pinkerton? Right. Thank you. Thanks very much. All right. Next on the agenda is our update on ELA, ELD, and math assessments.
Great. Erin and I are happy to share with you tonight English Language Arts, ELD, and math assessments for secondary schools. So just wanted to give you a couple of things. I want to start just with where we're headed and where we're going, or what our goals are related to that, and then I want to just tell you a few things to keep in mind before you begin looking at the data. So when I look at the goals and where we're headed, we're really looking at making secondary assessments Common Core and also SBAC aligned, right? We're well on the way to that, but there are things at the secondary schools that we need to continue to work on. We really want those assessments to be embedded within the curriculum so that teachers see it as a valuable part of the next step of assessing, and it happens to be something that we're looking in on that component of it, but not this extra assessment that you're giving for the district's sake. We don't have any desire to have it separated in that way. You know, we've purchased Illuminate, and it is an incredible resource for teachers to be able to utilize the data that can be pulled from Illuminate. It feels like a breeze just entered. Yeah. So housing that data within Illuminate is not only an incredible resource for teachers, but it gives quick access to what the data means. It disaggregates that for you and gives you information about it so that you can, for example, see 85% of students understood question 12, right? Or 15% of my students mastered this concept. So it gives great information back as a real tool. And then also, of course, we're working with teachers, and so that there's teacher buy-in and they believe in that assessment and that it's a good measure for the instruction that's going on in the room and that it matches what we need as well. So that's kind of where we're headed, the overall goals of what we're trying to accomplish with assessments. A couple things to keep in mind before you look at the data today. Students scored really well. In the packet that we gave you, we've seen a lot of progress. Tonight, Aaron's going to show you some kind of points so that you can get some point of reference, because just looking at 39%, it's hard to know is that improvement or not. So she'll give you a little point of reference. However, you have to keep in mind at this point of the year, it's not necessarily a projection. Could be. Right, could be a projection of how they're going to finish, but it is just point in time right now, right? So just kind of keep in mind at this point of the year, the data shows us where they are right now. We kind of hope that it's a projection of where they'll finish, but right now it just shows us where they are currently. There is a lot better alignment, and I think that when we are looking at why are things improving and why are we seeing growth, because our assessments and the process is beginning to align with the curriculum, with Common Core, and with SBAC. So as we find more alignment or creating that with teachers, we're seeing the results. So that's great. When you look at the English language arts comparison, just want to put out there that AP students tend to be heavily enrolled in term one and two, so therefore sometimes that skews your high school data just a little higher. In math, if you'll remember at the end of the year last year, we looked at all five of the SVMI tasks, and so right now you're looking at one, and now they're embedded. It's a great thing. So those are embedded throughout the curriculum now, and so they match the instruction. That's part of why I think we're seeing some growth there. And also we're seeing we've made a lot of progress when it comes to math. So the math curriculum really is now matching Common Core and SBAC. And so we are hoping that is a clearer projection of where they're headed. Okay. So Erin, we'll start with English Language Arts.
All right. So starting last year, we started administering full performance tasks that are aligned with what they'll look like on the Smarter Balanced Assessment that they're going to start taking. They can start taking in grades 3 through 8 starting March 11th. It's coming soon. So in those tasks, students read 4 sources on a topic. They range from informational text sources like you would see in a book, newspaper articles, even blog articles where someone might assert their opinion on the subject. Then they do part one, and they answer 3 to 4 research questions. And in this piece, it's the way that the rubrics are set up, it's to measure their ability to gather and analyze the evidence within the sources. And then in part two, they write a multi-paragraph response to the prompt in 1 of 3 of the major 3 writing types. So for this assessment, this fall, grade 7 did a narrative task, grades 8 and 9 did an information task, and grade 10, 11 did an argument task. So if we look at the data by grade from last year, here's where students were last spring when we first gave that same type of task. And it was an argument writing task. So there's a little bit, we're trying to draw comparisons. We have some point of reference on how did students do last year. But the argument task is a little bit different than the seventh grade narrative task and the grade 8-9 informational task. However, for SBAC purposes, students may be administered any of those three types and still receive a score. So Rick might get a narrative task, Eric might get an information task, Ryan might get an argument task. They're all scored on different rubrics, but they still would report their score on the performance task, and they'd be comparable data. So looking at, and these graphs load from the bottom up, so looking at grades 10 and 11, green is last year, blue is where we fell on the performance task that they just took in the fall. And they took an argument task both times. So this is pretty comparable data. It was an argument performance task and an argument performance task. So we have apples to apples here. Grades 8 and 9 did an information task. Students tend to do a little bit better on information tasks because argument, there's that making sure that you assert your argument and you support it and then also acknowledge the counter argument. So information, kids tend to do a little bit better, but still we're seeing quite a bit of growth. And then grade 7 students did very well on the narrative task with about 53% of students scoring proficient. And then if we look at our student group data, so again, from last year, end of year, we were seeing about 49%, about half of students were proficient on the task. So for the term one task, we see much more than that, a 28% growth there. And then also with our student groups, we have socioeconomically disadvantaged students, we also see a pretty good jump there, moving kids out of that level two, that not quite there yet, into the green. And then English learners who were experiencing just a little bit of success, and these are English learners that are in English courses, and then the very highest level of kids that might be in ELD. So they're getting ready to move from ELD into English. But we saw a lot more growth with them as well. And so moving to ELD, our ELD Common Assessment we piloted last year, and what we really see as a benefit of this assessment is that it's online, it's Common Core aligned. Students still, the CELT is the California English Language Development Test, it's the state test, is still technically aligned to the content standards and the old ELD standards. This assessment is aligned to Common Core and the new ELD assessments, but it still gives us very similar data. So it gives us data for their listening, speaking, reading, and writing, and it's very detailed. And the kids are pretty engaged with this. It's kind of fun to administer this test. They wear headphones the whole time. The directions are read aloud to them, and then they go at their own pace. So they push play, they listen to the directions. If they didn't hear it, they can repeat the directions. They also, for the speaking portion, record their voices using a microphone, and then we listen to it later and score it on a rubric. And so for the ELD Common Assessments, our point of reference is this year's CELT. So at the beginning of the year, all students take the CELT test. If they're brand new, they usually take it in August, and we have to give it by October 31st to any returning students. So this is how the students in ELD courses performed this year on the CELT. And on the English Language Development, the ELD Common Assessment, we see quite a bit of growth in writing. Reading, not quite as much. And the distinction here is that this assessment, the ELD Common Assessment, is Common Core aligned, and the text complexity levels are much more aligned to what grade level expectations are for SBAC. So I'm looking forward to seeing their end of year data and seeing how they do in a May assessment on this at that Common Core rigor of reading. And then lots of growth in speaking, listening, and then, of course, overall, because it calculates all four scores together. And then lastly, math. So we've been through lots of changes in math in the last 2 years, but we've been giving students SVMI performance tasks now for about 3 years, 3.5 years. And What we've done is embedded them in the curriculum. So this is an example of the middle school math units that were developed by some of our teachers. And so from August to June, here are the major units. So Unit 0 is a foundations course. It's about setting up a classroom, how to really deeply dive into these math concepts, how to learn in groups cooperatively together and function together as a team. And then our first unit for 7th grade was ratio and proportion, and for Math 8 was the number system. And we have to remember, too, that Math 8 is kind of a whole new course because algebra used to be in the 8th grade. It's been moved to the 9th grade. And so algebra or Math 8 is really this new, really solid course to get kids prepared for algebra. And so, as you can see, they're just starting Unit 3, but here's where the assessments land. So we're going to show you data for one task so far, and that was from Unit 1. Unit 2, they're finishing scoring their tasks and inputting the data right now. And then in Unit 3, Unit 3 for both 7 and 8 is kind of really meaty, so there's two tasks for each of those that we're pulling data for. And then for Unit 4 and Unit 5 for 7th, and then for Unit 4. So by the end of May, we'll have spread out the tasks for the common assessment instead of giving them all 5 in March like we did last year. And the other thing that I forgot to mention was, give me one second, is that the performance tasks are built, these tasks, the SVMI tasks, there's at least, I'd say, 2 to 4 tasks built into each unit. And what we're doing for the common assessment is we're just gathering the data for one of those tasks. And we set that out at the beginning of the year with the teachers. Which one could we pick up the data for? But these aren't the only tasks kids are seeing anymore. So when we first started administering the tasks, the district common assessment performance task was the only time they saw this level of problem, or not level of problem, but this type of kind of longer real-world problem where they had to solve it many different things on the same thing. So for the data for this, we have, here's where we were last spring when we gave the SVMI assessment all 5 tasks at one time in March. Here's where we are now. So the tasks are embedded within the curriculum. So this is when those concepts are pretty fresh in the kids' minds. We know that part. But also, we're seeing a lot less blank tasks, a lot less IDK, I don't know, because when we gave the assessment to them all at one time, or it wasn't necessarily in the context of their learning, they sometimes got frustrated. So, and now that they've had a few years of these kinds of tasks beneath their belt, they're not saying, well, C, I choose C. They're really trying to approach the problem and at least attempt to show us what they know. So we're seeing some growth there. And I'll share with you in June at a meeting the combined data from all of those tasks that we've spread throughout the year. And then if we look by our student groups, previously most students were not successful on these tasks. Now we're up to 39% of students being proficient on the task. So when we looked at socioeconomically disadvantaged data last year, it's kind of hard to tell with 10% proficient for all students and 5% proficient for SED where we're at. So now we can see there is a little bit of a gap, but it's not as big as we might have expected. And the same thing with EL, we were seeing pretty much no success with English learner students because these tasks are pretty language heavy. You have to read the problem, there's kind of a prompt at the beginning, the questions, they're not necessarily wordy, but it's really asking you rigorous questions about what you know about math, and you have to explain your thinking. And now we're seeing 19% of English learners can show us proficiency, and even maybe more important, that 35%, they're almost there. They're getting there. And I think we're on to Kim. Back to Kim.
great. So to kind of summarize and to think about what do you want to remember and take away from this, is that the task and the process itself are becoming more aligned with Common Core, and we're working hard to have that aligned with Common Core and SBAC. Also, we're seeing student growth. As subgroups are improving, so is the general group, and so it's great. Positive direction, it's moving forward. Obviously, we still have a ways to go, but we're seeing a lot of good growth there. And then another big part is that the assessments are now being embedded within the curriculum, so that it's when teachers value it, it's when students value it, and it's a part of what they're doing and not a separate outside piece. So some of the major pieces to walk away with. Any questions?
First, let's see if anyone from the public is here to discuss this. And no, so Mark?
Thank you. This is really great. It's really nice to see the improvement. So on the improvement, I just have one question. So are we looking at the students in 2000, I'm just making some numbers up right now, 13, 14, and then the next group of students coming up, or are we looking at a cohort? So are we comparing the same kids to last year to this year, or?
It's not a cohort, no. Okay. So we're just looking at all kids last spring, where were all kids at, and now where are all kids at this point in time, our data in process.
Okay, so just as one school board member, and if there were ever a chance to take some time out of your day, if I could take a look at the cohort, it would help me understand a little bit. And then I read the document, the narrative, and within there it said things like, we're seeing this improvement, however, in the ELD and the SED, we know we need to do more work, and we've kind of known that, and that's why we've had this achievement gap. So do you see within this the ability to make a strong effect on that, or do we still need to come up, because there was some suggestion about coming up with other, do we still need to come up with some other strategies, which we haven't tried yet?
Yeah, I think absolutely. So I feel like what it is, yes, there's an achievement gap has been there, and it's still there. And although it's closing and those subgroups are improving, we won't be satisfied till they're all successful. So we absolutely have more things to do. And we're doing a lot of those things, right? And it's really multi-layered. I look at things that we're doing at the district level with Dawn Addis being our EL and intervention TOSAs. That's the focus of her work. But at sites, you can also, there's Mayan as one little example, right? I mean, there's a whole plethora of interventions that are going on that sites are doing to address those needs. Summer school, you could just list a ton of them. And then, within classrooms, classroom teachers are doing things on a daily basis to address the needs and to go above and beyond and to differentiate for every kid that needs it.
Thank you very much.
Catherine?
Thank you. We've heard over the years concerns from parents and teachers and students about the amount of time the students spend being tested. And I see that this embedding the assessments into the curriculum is going to help that a great deal. But I wonder if you could quantify how much already it's reducing the amount of time the students are actually being assessed as opposed to being learning new material.
Well, I guess one way to look at it would be, it depends on which type of assessment you're looking at, right? But part of what Aaron was showing you of the major assessments that are there within each unit, kind of at the end of each unit, that there might be two. And I think one of the big difference, I feel like a real focus and a change, is that we want teachers to be hungry for that data and for that information and for that to be a useful tool that they don't see as something separate that's not part of what they're doing, but they need that information because that's going to drive the instruction and what they're going to do in their classroom in order to better address and to target a student's individual needs. So I feel like as we begin to embed that and as it's part of what teachers believe in, then it won't feel like an outside thing that's taking away from instruction. Instead, it will help them to target and personalize learning so that they can work smarter and not harder.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else from the board? All right. Thank you very much. It was a very informative presentation. All right. Next on the agenda is 8.02, Measure D, Approval of Architectural Contracts.
So
As the board knows, we, you know, early on in this process, we went out, did an RFQ, or RFP for proposals from architects, you know, through a committee selection process, which included a facility director from Templeton, principal, myself, other individuals. We selected three architecture firms. So two of those, PMSM, here in a local firm in the area, was kind of, you know, and basically looked at how they would fit with which school, which group. But they have been selected to move forward with San Luis Obispo High School. When it says proximity, it wasn't because they're close and they can walk over to the campus, which they probably could. It's more of a...
Excuse me.
Yes.
Are we going to do PMSM first?
We can.
Okay, because I have to recuse myself. My wife is an employee. All right.
Okay. We'll come get you. So for PMS and the proximity, yes, we had some of the firms that had applied and part of the RFQ that were from out of the area. And so to have that ability to, on a whim, you know, a call, a question, have to come over for a committee meeting, and to have that proximity is a positive thing in terms of the school moving forward. So that's kind of what that proximity meant, that's outlined there. So that's PMSM, Architects for San Luis Obispo High School. This, and again, it's going to be very similar, same thing for KBZ Architects with Morro Bay High School. Again, another great fit, kind of the STEAM and engineering technology, you know, that's happening here at Loams, that's going over and being addressed at Morro Bay High, is something that KBZ kind of ties into. They've done projects that have that flavor in Santa Barbara, and so they too have a great relationship, have really tied in together well. And I would say both PMSM and San Luis High and that site committee have really kicked it off. Same thing with Morro Bay High and with KBZ Architects. And so what this agreement today is basically to do the site master plan design. So this is taking the board's priorities, taking the facility master plan, and getting down to the nitty-gritty of the actual what are we going to do at San Luis Obispo High School in terms of construction, layout, you know, how are they going to build the office? What's it going to look like? How's it going to be? What are they going to do with the locker room facility? What about the classroom remodel? How that's going to look? Are they going to, you know, get rid of the hallways and add windows to the roof so it adds more natural light? All of those things are going to come out of this design process, working with the site committee, overarching, and then as well as all of the staff and stakeholders, including parents and students, getting input, tying in, looking at all those groups. But that site committee is important because they help kind of filter, because everyone has their own priority for their own classroom, for their own program, for their own project. And so they really help with the architects in guiding that process. And so what happens is out of this, we get budgets for each of those projects. And I, you know, and again, a lot more, I would say, in terms of just tied into what the actual dollars will be to do each of those on the campus. And then there's a matter of prioritizing those, right? What's going to get done first? What's going to get done last? How are we going to do that? And so that, those meetings with the architect, that's what you have in front of you today. Now, I will tell you there was a one change, because in the contract it had February 28th. As the date, that was for the pool design. So we have changed it to, as once this is hopefully approved by the board, that we would sit down together with them and set a date. We're thinking end of June is going to be a realistic timeline to get this accomplished before teachers go off for summer. And so that's our goal, so that we have the site committee meetings, architects are set, going, and hopefully by the end of the school year, that those pretty firm kind of, you know, site plans are available for each site that have budgets attached, prioritized. And I think as this process unfolds, what we'll do is we'll bring those to the board with updates, kind of where we're at, how it's going, kind of those insights. Ultimately, all of that will be brought to the board for approval. But this contract tonight is for the architect to work with the site committee at San Luis Obispo High School, PMSM, KBZ, Morro Bay High School, to get that accomplished, as well as the actual schematic design of the student support buildings at both schools. So the student support center, the office, the attendance office, activities office, all those groups to be, actually begin that design so that we can then submit plans to begin construction and get something off the ground in terms of getting a project going. And the location of those allows us to kind of move forward. And at both sites, I would say, starting with those, one, because they're new construction and the cost of those, if we can begin those now, will hopefully mean that they'll come in cheaper and at a lower cost than if we wait years. But they also both at San Luis Obispo High School, by beginning that building and getting it completed, that then opens up that entire space for us to do the multipurpose room, the cafeteria. So it begins kind of that phase of how we can get things accomplished. Same thing at Morro Bay High School in terms of beginning that and then phasing out their current offices and what we can renovate those in. So that's the other aspect of this, is just taking it to the schematic design phase. So not for the again, there will be another architecture contract coming for the next plans, what we're going to move forward on, but this is just for the overall site plan budget as well as the schematic design of the student support centers. Did I miss anything?
Couldn't say it better myself.
All right. Questions?
Yes, just...
First, we need to go to the public. If there's anyone from the public wishing to speak on this. See no one?
I'll come get you.
Anthony, you don't have any questions?
No, I just want to make sure that I'm absolutely clear, because I was looking through this, and my first question was, so much of it seemed to be directed toward the student support building, and that's going to be the real down to the nitty-gritty. My question really is, for the site design, will they get down to looking at, like heating and ventilation in a specific building, or converting hallways that will have lockers into additional classroom place, or is that the next step down the line?
It's a really good question, and it's kind of yes to both. It's really the deliverable at the end. They're going to have an overarching site plan that really has that's at a very high level, concept level, and then they'll probably have either written or graphic narratives of each of the big scopes of work. So they'll say things like renovate this hallway, renovate this classroom, a new HVAC in building 100, but in building 500 they say just new flooring. And it'll be kind of at that level, so they'll be able to put some more defined costs to that scope of that project. And then once we kind of say, this is a $5 million, this is $8 million, this is $9 million, this is $2 million, et cetera, here's our $60 million in work at the two sites, then we'll go and we'll kick off that schematic design phase on the $60 million in work that we choose. And we'll take it to that next level. Now, as Mr. Pinkerton said, we've kicked off that student support services building schematic phase, one, to get some of this going and get some, actually just to get some momentum going with the site committee. But that project does really pave the way for freeing up real estate in the campuses at both sites and giving us some sort of swing space and some breathing room to do some things. So what we may find is we get through that phase of the schematic design, and maybe at one site we push that project forward, and maybe at one site we don't. I'm not saying that that's been decided at this point, but it at least it's getting that moving, and we know we're going to build those two buildings because we kind of need to at both for a number of reasons. But it allows us to get that started, and then if we have to put it aside for a while, we can, and then come back to it. There's not lost work there, but it gets that kind of that. I hate to use the word, but the creative juices flowing and get some momentum and get some kind of energy going with the site committees and give them something they can really grab onto and touch. So,
Mark?
Thank you. When you talked about swing space, I was kind of really excited that there was this good organization that you're doing so that the offices were going to be done first, but by doing those first, there would open up classrooms and then we get less portables, and it's just all that kind of good thinking that I'm getting very excited about. I talked to Ryan, and I unfortunately, at least read one of the contracts all the way through before I fell asleep. And at the end, it talked about there will be 3 meetings with George and only 2.5 meetings with Sam. And it was like getting down to, you know, we'll only use 5 pens. I mean, it was really getting ridiculous. And so I asked Ryan, you know, if we don't put in some stuff, are we going to be missing? And so, Ryan, I don't know if anybody else cares, but it was important to me to know that we weren't going to get sort of hit with a bill for every time somebody...
Well, and so again, so with the design, I mean, they set a number of meetings and established with, you know, and that's something we've sat down with them, we've worked out. We feel like what we is in these contracts is it will be enough to accomplish what we need to do. Now, that said, the board wants the architects here for a meeting to get clarification, want to hear about things, they'll be here. If we need to have another meeting with the staff because we still need to iron things out, we'll absolutely have another meeting with staff. So this is just kind of a guideline in terms of moving forward. And that's, you know, a pretty typical thing in terms of contracts and laying out those meeting dates and so on. I mean, they've already been meeting and have come to things and actually have done. I mean, they just spent 2 full days on site visits with our 2 secondary principals going up the coast and looking at different sites and getting ideas and sharing and talking. They've done the same thing in terms of going down south and looking at pool facilities and those types of things. So,
in doing the math real quickly, that means we have about 15 minutes left of their time according to the contract. So I'm really glad to hear that it's a little more open-ended.
Yes.
All right, anyone else? Catherine?
Is there any way of knowing, based on this timetable, when we would be breaking ground, at least on the student centers?
He always looks at me for the diesel. No, it's okay. In my professional opinion at this point, I think the earliest we'd be breaking ground on this is if everything went just perfect in the next 6 months would be summer of next year. But I think that's a fairly aggressive schedule. And I think it's really going to hinge on a lot of things. One is how quick this committee really wants to move and how quick they can mobilize, as well as what we find in the ground if there's subsurface issues in terms of soil or groundwater or other environmental concerns that may come up through some of the other phases of this that we're working on currently that may delay the project. So that's kind of ideally it'd be nice to get some of it going next summer. And start that demolition and some of that bigger, noisy, dirty work in the summer. And then when the students are coming back, it's, things are kind of humming along and there's a rhythm going. That's probably the earliest those 2 centers could get going.
Thank you.
I'll say overall in the process, though, I mean, this will really, facility master plan, like we said, was 30,000 feet. This is going to bring us down to 1,000 feet, yeah. Right? I mean, it's going to... There's going to be some tough decisions that are going to have to be made. You have a budget. What's going to get accomplished? What projects? What's not? Those things. There's a lot of creative ideas coming out. Things that didn't come out of the facility master plan. Principals, people talking, parents, people giving input. They went and looked at site visits, checked things out. Hey, that would be great. We could do that. So all of that will come out. Will be shared with the board. Will be addressed. And so, we're going to... I'm going to make sure we stick to that budget. So despite the creative juices and everything, but that said, we want them to look at plans and develop and see what they can do. And if they have better ideas than maybe we initially thought about. But they will assign budgets to each of those items that will be much more realistic than maybe what we had with our facility master plan even. And so that will really help us in terms of planning and what we can get accomplished. It just depends on what the project is. That's the student services building, but there may be some classroom renovations or other things that we can get accomplished also next summer. So that will all, as we look at the projects, completely, prioritize those and then begin to lay them out in that timeline and apply the cash flow model and the bond model and funding and all those things will go into that discussion. It'll just, things will become more clear once we get this plan done to kind of help us and guide us into the future.
Thank you. And I will personally thank you for sticking to that budget, for
yes.
making sure we're doing things
yes.
that are appropriate financially and in keeping with our the board's fiduciary duty to
yes.
the district.
And I'll just add one thing. As we get, you know, as Mr. Pinkerton said, as we get more of that definition of what these projects are, as we start to get actual schematic design drawings for each of the projects rolling out, we're able to then pinpoint those costs much more accurately. So our you know, it's kind of like the weather. As you get closer to the day that the weather's going to happen, you can predict more likely what the weather's going to be. As we get more definition and more clarity on, you know, what the renovations are in these buildings and the scope of what this really is, we'll get more clarity on that cost. And so the goal is to continue to push the clarity of this forward, but still kind of maintaining that input and making sure we're getting everything from the sites and getting everything they want in there as well.
That's right. We'll be counting on receiving that more specific information as we further fine-tune the process and what we plan to do.
And my friends back here are going to be very tired of hearing Measure D.
Yeah. Okay, Marilyn.
Thank you. I'm not sure that I understand the difference between a schematic drawing and a working drawing.
Okay. I have a little manual I'm going to be handing out hopefully next at the board study session. It'll kind of show some examples of that.
Okay.
But if you can kind of visualize a schematic design as a very sort of loose floor plan. It's got some rough dimensions on it. It may have a few notes as to some of the finishes that are in that space. It'll have locations of windows. It'll have some rough elevations that kind of give general character. It's kind of your ideas drawing that has some more definition to it, but it's still at a loose level where you've not figured out your structural system, you've not figured out your specific mechanical systems, you may not have figured out a lot of your, some of your code things may still be kind of up in the air. You've got most of your code things figured out at a concept level. It's kind of the artistic phase of the process of architectural design. When you get to working drawings, you're now putting hard dimensions. There's actually plywood, and you're showing studs, and you're showing this is now TGI joists, not just sort of a conceptual structural member, and you're saying it's a 12-inch deep joist, and you're starting to give a lot more technical information into the set of drawings, much more work to produce that working set of drawings than, say, a schematic set.
So those would be bid documents. Those
correct.
Would be
okay. Correct.
So are we saying then in the information that we're receiving tonight that off of the schematic drawings we think we're going to get hard cost information?
We're going to get more definition to hard cost information, but there's still what we do in the industry is when we have a schematic level set of documents, we send that to a cost estimator. They're using their best judgment on what a space similar to that is cost elsewhere in the state, but they still put a what we call a design contingency in there to kind of allow for some of the things that
for finishes
that are,
and various
things. Or things that aren't quite defined at this point. When we get into construction documents, they sit down and they do a bid. I mean, as if they're a contractor bidding the job. And they're able to say, you know, it's umpteen sheets of plywood, you know, to do this job, and it's, you know, so many board feet of lumber, and it's X number of yards of carpet, and they're actually able to almost take a bid off of it at the working drawing phase. So
they should be able to get a bid off a working drawing.
As an estimator,
should be able to.
Contractor would, yeah. But as an estimator, you know, again, when an architect hires a cost estimator or the district hires a cost estimator, there's still some, you know, design contingency even at working drawing phase, because they're not actually going to build it, and they're not, you know, they're taking, you know, their best guess at what
right.
a typical contractor would charge for that, but there could be certain local things. It could be timing, you know, there could be 8 jobs hitting the bid in this area at that same time, and that could throw the bids off. You know, so there's a lot of different market conditions that an estimator can't necessarily put their finger on, but they try to put some factors in that account for sort of some of those unforeseens.
We'll okay. also address that with the project delivery model
yeah.
as well, because depending on which we choose, you could have a contractor who comes in on the process earlier who helps with those, you know, while the plans are being developed, while that's going on, and can be part
mm-hmm.
of that process
mm-hmm.
to give those costs. So that's another aspect versus just waiting for the bid to see how it comes out type of thing. So you know, that'll be something at the next board study session that we'll get into a little bit more in depth.
So, okay, I thank you. I appreciate that. I'm just trying to understand off of these initial contracts, mm-hmm. what we hope or what we're contracting to receive are schematic drawings
for the Student Support Center at each San Luis Obispo High School and Morro Bay High School, as well as an overall
the broad brush
site plan where you'll see it's almost, I want to call them bubble drawings, where it's kind of here's what the multi-purpose room is going to look like, but it just has, it's a lot, it's just,
it's a footprint.
It's a lot looser. Like, okay, they were going to have 4 food lines, and there's going to be 8 tables on the side, and there's going to be it's a lot looser in terms of that design aspect of it.
Okay, I understand.
But they will be able to, with that, I mean, I think, right. have a much better price idea. Because right now, we've just said, there's going to be a food court multi-purpose room.
Those cost $450 a square foot, and
and
it's this many square feet, so we're kind of up at that 30,000 foot level.
Right.
Now, when they start to put some definition to that,
there's going
to
be a stage.
Yeah, there's going to be a stage. There's going to be tables.
And then we get a lot more information, so we know if we're talking a Cadillac or a Ford.
We can say it's now $432 a square foot. You know, it's still kind of a loose number that's working off of a bigger unit price. And then when we get to that schematic design level, now they can start doing some rough takeoffs and get that down to now it's $428.50 a square foot.
Okay. I
mean, they're not getting into that detail, but it's that kind of concept. You're getting a greater detail
it.
As you get it. So
I get it now.
It's true that we don't go from 400 to 600.
600.
Right. So those are the other parts of as we get a lot tighter about what we can and can't do and make decisions about how money should be spent based on the board's priorities.
Thank you. Just one other quick question. If in the contract, does it, as Mark or Mr. Buckman brought up, the contract allows for a certain number of meetings and what have you, is there an hourly fee that would be charged if we need additional architectural time?
Yeah, I think we would negotiate it up front, you know, and say we need you for a 3-hour meeting and, you know, what's your hourly rate? And
at $250 an hour or whatever. I don't know what an architect makes, but okay, so that
we've got
would
them
be
a little better than that, but yeah, we're
oh, I don't know.
We've done a good job.
I totally don't know.
That's okay.
But that would be a predetermined rate, hourly rate.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
I think, in all honesty, we've got enough meetings cooked into there. I sat down with them beforehand and said, you know, this is how many I think we need from our side. What do you guys think it takes? And they said, yeah, you know, I think, but if we add this one or this one, they said, okay, I think that's a good number of meetings that I, you know, over a 6-month period, I think will get us what we need.
Okay, but, you know, this group loves a good meeting.
Yeah. I was just going to actually say that if we, you know, as we proceed, if it looks like we're bumping up against what we've contracted for, that we'll be aware of some of those things so that we don't just begin going over without knowing or assuming that we have 4 more meetings available to us or whatever, that someone will be keeping us surprised.
And keep in mind, you're going to have a lot more contracts coming down the pipeline with both of these firms.
Right.
So,
right.
you know, if we aren't able to, say, catch something that we want in this meeting, we're going to have probably 2 or 3 more contracts right behind it that we'll catch it in that
okay.
contract or catch a meeting in that contract. So I think, you know, we're at the very beginning. If this was the last project rolling out and we were started going, then I'd, you know, be a little more concerned about that.
Okay.
But I don't want to be very cavalier with their time.
Of course.
But I want to sort of set the parameters and say, this is what we need. And if we start to see we need 5 more meetings, well, that's a different conversation than, hey, I need you to come to the board meeting for an hour.
And I'm sure that Ryan will keep us as we expend money or as we know where we stand at all times so that we know if we're
we'll
starting
be meeting
to
bump monthly.
Against something. Okay, perfect.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So if we can, after Mr. Buckman, I think for Mr. Millar's sake, if we can approve the PMSM contract, then he can actually come back in. And we could do the KBZ if you choose.
It's going down to 46 tonight. I think we ought to make them.
Mark?
Yes, real quickly. And I don't need a lot on this. It just dawned on me. When I talk to you guys, there's been a lot of warning about what we need to see under the ground and what's the old infrastructure and whether we need to replace it. And I'm so excited about, you know, let's jump off the 30,000-foot diving board and get down here and design something and maybe get it started. And it dawns on me, are we getting is there a chance we're going to get too far ahead of ourselves? What if the infrastructure isn't right? We're okay.
Yeah, no, this first site planning phase is that initial, hey, do we have an adequate electrical service to serve the things we're talking about?
So that'll happen before.
That'll happen. Now, will we have it figured out exactly? No, but we'll know, hey, we need to do a new service, a new electrical service at San Luis High, for example, and 3,000 linear feet of plumbing piping. Yeah, and then we'll kind of be at that level.
Marilyn?
Thank you. Okay, I'll move approval of the agreement for architectural services between San Luis Coastal Unified School District and PMSM Architects for San Luis Obispo High School site planning and student support building dated, I don't have a date, as presented to the board on February 3rd, 2015.
I'll second that.
Sure. All right, any further discussion? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so we have 5 in favor, 1 abstention, Mr. Millar, and 1 absent. Okay, 1 absent. Okay, 2 absent. All right, so next. We need...
So approval for KBZ.
Right.
But we can ask Mr. Millar if he may have some questions about...
Okay. Mr. Millar.
The Morro Bay High School.
Welcome back. We missed you. Were you cold out there? Yeah. Do you have any questions about the KBZ contract? We've kind of talked about contracts in general here.
I don't.
All right. Anyone from the public wishing to discuss the KBZ contract? All right, it appears that we are ready for a motion to approve that contract.
I move approval of the KBZ contract as provided for in our documents here.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Catherine seconds. All right. Marilyn, are you going to participate in this vote? Are you able to? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. We have 6 in favor and 1 absent. All right. All right. We are on to the action consent agenda. Please let me know if there are any items you wish to have pulled. 9.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 9.02, authorization to teach outside credential authorization.
Pull.
9.03, acceptance of donations.
Pull, please.
9.04, disposition of surplus property. 9.05, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 9.06, approval of purchase orders. 9.07, approval of warrants and payroll. 9.08, approval of California High School exit exam waivers for students with disabilities. Right.
I'll move approval of items 1, 4 through 8. 9.1 through 9.8.
All right.
Excluding, excluding 2 and 9.02 and 9.03.
Okay. So we have a motion by Walt, a second by Marilyn. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Any opposed? All right. And 1 absence in Chris. Okay, 9.02, Jim.
Yeah, this actually, I think my question really pertained to the athletic PE issue. Now, these are on-site teachers that are being asked to coach a sport and then given a PE period to do so. Is that correct? No?
Are these the people outside their...
Yeah, it's out of the side of their credentialing.
So this year we are being audited by the County Office of Education.
Okay.
And so there are certain teachers that we felt the courses they were teaching fit within their area. Gene felt that they were appropriate. However, when we were audited by the county office, these are primarily positions that would be taught by somebody with a career technical education credential, because they have been in that career. And so one of the issues that we have that Mr. Robinette and I have chatted about is the fact that some of the titles indicate that they're ROP classes when we no longer have ROP funding, or that they're careers in something, which then triggers that career technical education credential. So we're probably going to be looking at the way we're titling our courses and things, because many of these teachers have been teaching these courses for quite a while. So that's what the ones up above.
And Kristen, that's a great answer to
the first part.
And I understand that one. Mine is really about the second part. So,
the second part has to do with I think what you said.
They're
receiving PE credit for somebody who doesn't have a PE authorization.
Okay. So is this something new, or this is always okay? No. As our past practice and so forth. Great, thank you. Having answered more than I ever requested, and with great accuracy and detail, I might say. So I move approval of this item 9.02.
Marilyn, did you have a question on this?
Oh. Your light. No, but I'll second that.
Oh, okay. Any further discussion? All in favor of approving item 9.02?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. 9.03, acceptance of donations, Marilyn.
Thank you. I just wanted to note in general regarding donations, we are very grateful for any monies and donations that our schools receive from the community, and we're very appreciative of those. But as a side, it has lately appeared to me that some schools may be receiving more in donations than other schools, and that may just be a function of the way the world is. I don't know, but I've asked for, and I think the board has received, some information related to donations received by the various schools in the district over the last 2 years, and I would just like the minutes to record a concern on my part about equity in donations to schools throughout our district. And that said, I'll move approval of item 9.03, acceptance of donations.
Any further discussion? I'll second. And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Mr. Millar.
I'm not opposing.
Oh, are we on advanced agenda?
No, I didn't want to pull the item, but I think we would be remiss if we didn't acknowledge Gene Keller's retirement as personnel analyst and the heart and soul of the personnel department.
Good catch.
Yes. Yes.
Bon voyage and good luck.
And has made more than several personnel directors look really good over the years.
Although it is my understanding that Gene Keller will not be leaving us until June.
Yes.
So we... Yes. Yeah, she will be... she'll still be with us. All right. We are on to item 10.02, advance... I seconded. Advance agenda. Anyone have anything they'd like to put on the advance agenda? Mark.
Thank you. There was some discussion at the last meeting and about possibly changing graduation requirements to allow for, and I'm just going to keep using this term, ROP-type classes to be used to replace, and I still don't understand what they would replace. So I'm just asking that we explore as a board, or if we ask staff to explore, I believe there's over 1,000 ROP classes in the state already with curriculums. We have several that are A to G compliant. So I just need to better understand this.
So are you asking for an information item? Are you asking for a presentation at a board meeting? Are you asking for something on Friday night? I don't understand that.
I'm in under advanced agenda, so you know if I don't get a second, it goes away. But I would be happy with just some more information.
Okay. I'll second that.
Okay. Jim, did you have a comment?
Yeah, I was just going to comment that, yes, that as we look through this A to G requirements, if there are other courses or ways of adjusting current courses that we have so they meet those requirements, I would be interested in that also.
Do you have enough to go on?
We're actually kind of preparing. We discussed it in Cabinet this last Monday. Perhaps, depending on the rest of the agenda, a series of meetings where we would talk about just what is A through G. Let's get a good understanding of what the regents say and what does this mean. We throw that term around a lot. What are graduation requirements per Ed Code, as well as what are the graduation requirements in San Luis Coastal? And then what types of recommendations do we as a board want to make regarding A through G, CTE, and those requirements? So I think it's a very good thing for us to be exploring.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Thanks very much. All right, reports by board members. Anyone?
I do.
Well,
I have one. I was able to attend with a number of my colleagues a farewell to Melissa Newman at Pacific Beach High School. She's retiring and will finish her legal studies and move on to her next career. And it was very gratifying to see the enthusiasm from the students. And I'm also happy to report that Mrs. Narn, I never know whether I'm pronouncing that correctly or not, Narn, is stepping up and taking the banner of mock trial. And so I think she's got a couple of volunteer coaches for next year and looking forward to that. And then I also had a chance to attend the retirement of Glenn Olker from his medical practice, and it was like old home week for old board members and old superintendents, and it's great seeing Carol Olker, who is retired counselor, and they seem to be embracing the retirement life with great enthusiasm. So it was a wonderful event. Got to see a lot of old friends.
I will, as an aside, indicate that I had a long conversation with Attorney John Fricks today, who runs mock trial for the County of San Luis Obispo, and he was bemoaning the loss of Pacific Beach the last year and this year, and urging me to find a replacement, and indicating how grateful they are whenever PAC Beach participates. So I will send him an email in the morning, and he will be very happy to hear that PAC Beach will be back participating.
And I think the model is going to change a little bit, because when you have a small school with a small team, especially for the kids at Pacific Beach, sometimes there are family issues and other employment issues and things that make the participation at times a little iffy. And what ends up happening is really great kids step up and take on more and more. So I think that she has some good ideas for how to structure it a little better, so that we'll be able to field a team regularly in the future.
He will be very happy to hear that. Thank you, Mark.
I was lucky enough to go on a boardwalk at San Luis High School with Marilyn, and Chris was there, and I know you were. Yeah, Catherine. Yeah, and it was very informative and very good to get a very good overview. I mean, we did classrooms and we did the auto shop, and I got some advice on my car, and it was all good. And then the second thing is I went to the Sinsheimer math night because I was hoping to get some tips, but the kids were it was just amazing, and there were some kids with little crowns on, and they were the helpers and the mentors. And they did an excellent job, and I did have a chance to talk with a lot of parents and staff. So it was very nice.
Good. All right. We will now adjourn until February 13th, our next Measure D study session from 8 a.m. till noon in B3 at the district office. If anyone's interested in attending, followed on the 17th by our regular meeting in J2. Thank you.